Hola, mi gente. We are Spanish aquí presents. We have Raisa, Oscar, Tony, and Carlitos is out shooting the reboot of Sex and the City.
Okay.
Oh,
I was waiting.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. He's replacing Samantha.
Samantha. That's what
oh,
I heard.
He is. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, but yes, they're yes. not going to say anything. They're not.
No,
gonna...
he is playing Samantha.
Yeah, exactly. He's right. just going to yeah, play yeah. Samantha. They're not going to comment on anything.
Do y'all remember the weird, this was a very short-lived show, a blip in the cultural radar, but it was a, I want to say a legit copy of Sex and the City. It was called Lipstick Jungle.
Oh
yeah.
With Brooke Shields.
Oh my God.
Lucy yeah. Liu was in it, I
wow.
think.
Wow.
But it was on a network, right?
It was on a network. It was network trying to do yeah. what HBO yeah. was doing.
You can't do that.
That was
on
so,
network.
But it's so funny how like, there's you see a show that's like, oh my God, it's doing well. Let's have a copycat show of it. But it's like the part that, right? Sex and the City did really well because it was on HBO. They talked about yeah. all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. That's the thing though that like made it. That's the thing. HBO's like always been so like raw and like fresh with that like kind of stuff. Like where like they just,
yeah,
they
show
go there.
Butts, right?
Yeah. Well, but yeah, but like you can't like really, you can't even say like certain things, I think, like on like network television, which I get it because it's network and you know like your kid could be watching it or whatever, I don't know,
right.
I feel like that's why. But yeah, do you remember Carrie Diaries? They did,
of course. Which, I remember Carrie
oh
Diaries.
God.
That was on the CW.
Oh,
I watched it. I watched
you
that
did you like
yeah.
it?
Yeah. You know, it honestly wasn't terrible. I don't think so. I don't really remember it that much. I think it's hard when you do like the pre of something
mm-hmm.
and you kind of like change, you just decide to change and make choices for this character where like if I was Carrie Bradshaw, I'd be like, wait, my mom didn't die or whatever that, I don't know, I think they like kill the mom in it or
okay,
something.
Spoilers
like,
much? Wow. You didn't know? I might have wanted to watch the Carrie Diaries eventually.
Ay, por favor, por favor.
But wait, what's the premise of the Carrie Diaries is
before.
Carrie and Samantha being friends, yeah?
I honestly don't even remember.
Wow,
I don't even remember.
Right.
I don't think
impact,
I don't
I see.
Yeah, that's it didn't. It only was like one season. I remember the actress, she was really cute and she was really good like in the role. Like I definitely did believe she could have been like baby like SJP.
Uh-huh.
But and the like the outfits were cute, but I honestly it was a while ago. I don't really remember. I feel like it was like 4 or 5 years ago. I can't remember
wow.
what I did last week. I can't remember
Can I
what
give
I did.
A little industry secret.
Oh,
about-
okay.
She goes by SJ, not SJP.
Ay, bueno. For
she
me,
goes
she's
by
SJ.
Know
that?
SJ.
SJ. I used
Why?
To work in advertising, and we did Lancome and L'Oreal, and she was the face of that campaign for a while in the late 90s.
Tony
I was
Rodriguez
very, I was like
is
a child.
The Miranda Priestley of advertising right now.
Oh,
she's giving me a Miranda
my
Priestley character.
God.
Yes, I love how this is the second time we've tried to put Miranda
yeah.
Priestley in the Sex and the City universe.
Yeah,
makes sense to me.
It totally makes sense to me. Totally, yeah.
There should be a Devil Wears Prada Sex and the City crossover. Maybe that's
okay.
Maybe that's
wait.
The third movie. Maybe that's what Carlos is working on.
Yeah.
Yes.
wait. Before we even get into the pica, what about the craziest thing of how Anne Hathaway was the ninth choice for Devil Wears Prada? That was the wildest thing I had heard in a long time because I was
and
just
where'd
like,
you hear
no.
it? RuPaul's Drag Race?
I guess I don't know. I just saw it on a video.
Duh.
Is that where she said it?
I guess I'm just realizing it's surely that's not the only place she said it. I just realized that. Surely.
Don't you, Tony's like, don't you get all your news from RuPaul's Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, I'm dead. I'm
the New York Times, the Washington Post, and RuPaul's Drag Race.
Got it. Yeah. Seems, yeah. I get it.
Oh my gosh. Oh, hysterical. Okay. Anyway, so shout out to Lipstick Jungle, Carrie Diaries, and all the shows that came.
And Anne Hathaway.
And Anne Hathaway, of course. Anne Hathaway.
I fucking love her so much.
Why do you love her?
You know,
because she's very polarizing.
She is. I have a theory about why after you answer for yourself.
I don't know. I think she's a great actress since she was younger. I liked all her movies. I think she's, I mean, Devil Wears Prada obviously was a movie that I've watched so many times. And, you know, it's like, you know, they try to like put her as like the like bad person in so many situations of the movie that like I watch it again and again. I'm like, no, he was the fucking boyfriend. Fuck him. And fucking the friends, they were so, I don't know. I was like, if when, like, I always think back to that scene with the phone where they, and like, I'm just like, if any of my friends did that to me with my phone when it was like my fucking boss, that like, what, not that scared of, but like, it's just my boss. Like, how fucking dare you? Like, I would literally have slapped their faces in that fucking bar because a mí no me toca el teléfono, coño. But also, I don't know. That's just me. I don't know. I like her. I don't know what it is. She just seems like chill. I also know other stuff like from people that have worked with her where she's very like normal and doesn't act like a fucking diva from a lot of people. I've heard that at least on my end. So go ahead. You can say yours.
She's like a musical theater nerd to the max. And I think she's like has her heart on her sleeve kind of person. And she loves what she does. She feels so happy to be able to do it. And I think that you see yourself similarly. I think you like you don't hold back. You put yourself into everything you're doing. And maybe you're Latina Anne Hathaway. I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
Except for the musical theater part.
Yeah, because you know a bitch can't sing.
Also, though, she's like very like, not very, but at least politically active with like LGBTQ stuff. She seems very much like, she seems like a caring person. And then so are you, I would say.
Yeah. Aww, oh my God. Thank you. So I love it. Okay.
Shout out to Anne Hathaway's people. Damn, yeah. We're really shouting out all of Hollywood today, huh?
Yeah, hit me up. We'll do a like Latina duo. I'll be the Latina and she won't be. Okay, next.
Okay. What? What?
I got distracted because I heard an alarm as I was saying. I was like, what the fuck is that noise? I was like, I need to finish my sentence. Guys, I have ADHD. I don't know what to tell you. Okay, let's get into this pika because I feel like we're never going to get it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So just switching gears.
Stop.
My pika is, what's the deal with Miranda Priestly? No, anyway.
I was going to say, that's all.
Is that a Miranda Priestly quote?
That's all about that we're going to talk. Oh, never mind.
No, go, Oscar.
I don't know. I've never seen The Devil Wears Prada. Anyway, so I wanted to.
Wait, hold on. How the fuck are you going to say that and then try to start the fucking pika?
Is that like a phenomenon? Like, it's not that big a deal.
I'm going to say this. Yeah.
Okay, wait. Okay. This is, slow down,
this
Meryl
is
Streep.
Meryl Streep's best role ever.
Incorrect.
Okay, oh, whatever.
I'm sorry. Incorrect. Whatever.
Drag me, motherfuckers.
No.
This is her best role ever.
How many have you seen?
A lot.
I've
and
seen
this
enough.
Is her
I've
best.
Seen
no,
enough.
I don't
Meryl
mean Oscar. I mean Ryza for saying that this is the best one.
Oh, a lot. Okay. A lot. I've gone down that IMDb list. And let me tell you, Devil Wears Prada, Meryl, you are a star.
She's a star.
Is that her best? You think that's
her best?
That's my favorite.
I mean,
that's
Oscar for it. So.
I know that that's two different things. I know. But for me, my favorite becomes the best. Like, that's how I see it.
Okay. So it's your favorite Meryl Streep role. Okay. What is the best Meryl Streep role, Tony?
You've seen a lot
of her movies.
You know what? This is very underrated, and I don't think anyone would say this. At least top three, The Bridges of Madison County.
Okay.
Very, like, understated.
Okay.
She's brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not in everything.
She's not brilliant in any...
Really? We should start a podcast about this.
Anyway, her best performance was in Ricky and the Flash. Anyway, right to our...
Go,
right
go
into
to the
our
pika.
Pika. Of course, I'm kidding. Anyway, so we're talking about art. Talking about art and art's responsibility and how ourselves are integrated into our art. And I was just thinking, very stream of consciousness the other day. Actually, I was watching... So, okay, my favorite artist, one of my favorite artists of all time is Andrés Serrano, who is an artist who was famous for making a work of art called Piss Christ. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Long time ago, right?
He essentially took a crucifix of Jesus Christ and encased it in a jar of urine, and took a picture of it. And it's this like weirdly serene and beautiful image. I'm going to say my favorite piece of art. And I love him as an artist. And he is a Afro-Latino artist from, and I was just thinking, like, would I consider his art to be Latinx art because he is Latinx? Or does that piece stand on its own? So I guess my pica is our art tied to us in the way that it's perceived in the world? Or can we separate the art as its own child, devoid of who we are, our identities, and what we do? If that makes any sense.
Yes, well, I think...
Oh, go, Tony. I'm like, this is the intense question.
As a point of comparison, not to bring her right back into this conversation, but let's say Anne Hathaway. Or... Or Meryl Streep. When we talk about their art, are we saying as a cis white woman bringing Miranda Priestly to life? Or if she was Latina, let's say, I'm going to say this, Salma Hayek in the role.
Yeah.
We would be talking.
Exactly.
We've seen Salma Hayek in that role. She plays, what's that movie with Tiffany Haddish?
It came out right before the pandemic.
What was it
yeah.
called?
Yeah. I forget, but it's a movie with Tiffany Haddish and Salma Hayek is like a boss and fucking somebody
oh,
else.
Oh, yes.
Oh, isn't it, from Bridesmaids? What's her name?
That's Rose, right. Rose. Oh my god!
Fuck, you guys know what I'm talking about.
IMDb, the one, the, IMDb,
IMDb.
Burn, whatever. Burn.
Yes,
Rose Byrne.
We worked with her at James Corden.
We
did the Lion King musical.
A close friend of Tony and ours. Of course.
Okay. Yes, yes. Okay. Well, anyways,
I call her Rosie. That's why I'm like, who?
Oh, duh. Like a boss. Yes, exactly.
Like that a movie. Boss,
thank you,
like
thank you, boss. Producer Anita, for googling. But yeah, Salma Hayek actually does play almost like her own version of that.
You're
I would say.
You're yeah. right.
So interesting you said her, but sorry,
so
go on.
So in that case, for example, let's take the Meryl Streep, Salma Hayek dichotomy, right?
Okay.
Is Salma Hayek's portrayal of that character seen as Latina despite her, I mean, even though she is Latina, can we separate that character as someone who's Latinx but not a byproduct of the artist who is Latinx? If that makes any sense?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Because we're consuming, it's almost like if you're not cishet white in America, at least, that's the lens of other is, it's always there. I mean, if we're talking about like foreign films, let's say, that wouldn't exist as much, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Like, for example, like the hypothetical that I'm going to put Ryza in this example, okay?
Oh my God, go.
So Ryza is Latina, yes. Cuban, from Miami,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And she writes a book, a novel, about a girl
okay.
who comes up like a rags to riches story, let's say, hypothetically. Not once did Ryza include her ethnicity, her gender, necessarily. It's just like a story that is told. Now, in the way that we consume it, does the consumer identify, because Ryza is so vocal about being Cubana, Latina, then put the lens of that into the character that she made into that book? And then is Ryza a Latina writer for Latinas, or is she a writer for a white audience?
So as Ryza... who wrote this book.
Yes, exactly. yes. Thoughts about the book that you wrote, right?
Thanks for coming to talk about it here.
Oh my God, you're welcome. Also, buy it wherever they're selling books.
there. Whoever's selling books, yeah, just buy it from them.
Okay, so now I feel like I kind of get it. Also, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, but, please.
Yeah. I think that, and this is not my personal, like, I don't think I do that as much, but I feel like that is done to people like me, how you literally describe me. Like, I think, like, it's something that I talk about even with acting, because it's like, you know, like, I might go in for whatever role it is, and you guys know I'm not shy, I'm like the opposite of like the shy, like little, like nice, sweet, whatever, like breakdown that they would put that. I could still go in and play that. But if you know me and you're a writer in the room, or if you're, you know, yeah, like obviously we're actors and we can play different roles. Like being shy and not shy are two fucking different things that anybody can play, whether they're any of those things. But I think like immediately people will put that in their head. Oh no, but Raisa literally, like, she posted this thing the other day and like she was all fucking like wild and shit. Like, and she's playing this little like nerdy, sweet, quiet girl that says one word in the whole scene. So I think that that is definitely put on us. Have I done that before when I've read or watched something? 100%. But I think that like it's something where like when I do see like certain breakdowns and I'm like, oh, I know why I'm going in for this. It's because it's very much my type. It's very Raisa, right? But I'm like, I wonder if like everybody that is going in for that is doing that. And I know that like a lot of times that's why we get asked to do certain things, because that's how people, like everybody just has that like that filter in front of us is how I see it. But I think like if you're saying like a book, it is a little harder if you don't know the author. If it's a brand new author, unless you like see that the name sounds Latina or whatever, you know, or whatever that is, or you have them on social media or things like that, because we do live in a world where, you know, we can find out so many things about so many people and immediately you have that in the back of your head, right? So it's like when you're watching things or reading things, or like even me, like when I watch like a sport, if I know that this guy like, you know, is a creep, or like there's somebody like playing that, you know, got called out for something, for being racist or whatever it is, like it's so hard to not think about that. Even when he's like doing his interview after the game, I'm like, oh, like fuck this guy. Like it's, even though like I'm like he played really good or whatever that is, like I always think.
So the perception clings despite.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. I feel like that. I mean, I wish it didn't in more things, like how I was talking about, like, you know, like the book or like, like a role or something like that. Obviously, when it's something like, you know, like, like assault or like, sure, like racist or something like that, that's like, I'm kind of happy that I still remember. Right, cause then like, I might be like, oh my God, grade three. And then I'm like, wait, no, fuck that guy. You know, he, whatever they
did. Oh yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I'm talking about like, just like identity of self. Like, so, for example, like, if we were, here's the thing. It's like, I'm sure that if you wrote a book, Raisa, like, you want to be known, or maybe not. Maybe that's part of why I'm struggling with this, is you release a book and you're like, yes, I want to be known as a Latina writer. Like, that's what I want. Yes, I want to inject my character as Latina. But then what if you write something that isn't necessarily Latina based or dealing anything with being Latinx? Is that still unavoidable? Are people still going to be like, oh yeah, this Latinx character? And it's like, well, the piece of art isn't necessarily that. I, as an artist, am that, but my piece of work isn't necessarily that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, so you said it like that. And yeah, I think that that's, again, like, and I bring it back to TV and movies. And it's like, you could be Latino. And you could write a show and have two seasons of it and have maybe majority Latinos in it. That doesn't mean it's a Latino show, because it's
interesting.
Like, yeah. Okay. Well, do you watch? OK, here's my question. Do you guys watch Insecure? And do you think, oh, this is a Black people show?
Oh, I don't.
I don't.
No.
At all.
Right. No.
But
right.
That's interesting.
No, you're right.
But do you watch Fresh Off the Boat? And do you think, oh, this is an Asian show?
Well, they did. They very much deal with their literally fresh out of water, the fish out of water kind of.
Yeah. But so does Insecure. Insecure deals with a lot of like Black issues, but I don't watch it and think like that. So this is a really, like, now, like when I get into it like that, which I've been having a lot of these conversations with different people where I'm like, sure. Yeah. Crazy Rich Asians was a movie with all mostly majority Asians. Right.
Right.
And but to me, I was just like, oh, this is just like a fucking rom-com. Like, you know what I mean? Like that, that I didn't think, like, I wasn't like, oh, this is an Asian people movie. Like, I don't know. I'm really trying to break away from that, because I think that is what continues to hinder BIPOC, not even just people of color. It continues to hinder, because when you have a show, you know, like special. So what? Oh, it's only for special needs people? No, it's not. Or like, you have a show about white people, like people that watch white people shows. That's literally what we had been watching for so many years. Yeah. Like all these white people, I wasn't like, oh, this is a show for white people. I feel very strange watching this as a Latina.
I mean, I do feel that way about Frasier, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm going to be real. Yes,
sure. But there's a lot of people that are not white and don't feel that way.
I mean, you're totally right. That's the norm. The norm, the default is white. I mean, that's just the way it is. white cishet is the norm, right?
Yeah. Tony, sorry.
Tony has his hand raised.
Oh, I had my hand raised. I was like, what is the difference between seeing people of color and not, and is it, are we seeing that color or is it just a story to us? Is it how much, how are the characters dealing with their identity? Is it as other versus insecure? It's just like navigating life, romance,
right?
Being awkward.
But I think about Rami. I've talked about Rami so much on the podcast, and I love, like, that show is so good. And it's, you know, I don't even know that much about being Muslim, but like I watched that show and I learned about that, and I was educated on like other, you know, aspects of that world that I didn't know. But I'm watching this and like I related to the mom in a situation of like her episode of like the last season or like the sister's episode and like, you know, being fetishized and like things like whatever that is. Like, and I was like, oh, like as a woman of color, I related to them. But I think like another, like a white woman can also watch this and relate to, you know, whatever that is with those characters, with those, you know, with just like what's happening in a relationship, like, right. Which is why when I watch things or art or whatever, I try not to connect only because it's Latina, like something Latina or Latinx, whatever. But I just try to like connect with it just because it's something I feel I connect with as a human, as a person.
But I think also the thing with Rami is Muslim and wrote and produced and starred in a Muslim piece of art. Does that make sense?
Yes.
We as consumers digested it differently because we are not Muslim. We identify with the human condition, but we don't necessarily identify with the Muslim stuff because it's not something that we're familiar with. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not to say that that's wrong by any means. No, we're learning a lot more. We're educating. Our scope of digestion has become much larger. But can we disassociate the artist to the art? Like, for example, a show I've been thinking about this way because I just watched, and this is not a show that I would ever watch because it's not really in my wheelhouse, but a friend recommended Love, Victor. Have you seen that show?
Yes.
So yes, Love, Victor so is sort of like, it's a spinoff of Love, Simon, which is about, it's like a sort of Disney-fied version of Coming Out, which I have my own issues with. So I was a little like, oh God, Love, Victor. I don't know if I want to watch this. And so I watched it because a friend recommended it to me, but also it had an incredible Latinx cast, right? Mm-hmm. And I was blown away by that show. I would recommend Love, Victor to anybody. It is really, really cool. But I think that was like the first instance where I was like, okay, I'm seeing a pretty mostly Latinx cast.
Hell yeah.
Living in a Latinx family and having like Spanglish being tossed around like very casually. And it didn't feel like it was trying to snare me in a Latinx net. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, It was doesn't throw it.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, and besides the fact, it's about this boy dealing with his identity. And I thought that was like so weird. I've actually never really experienced something like that because I always digested it as the sort of like exterior facade first. And then I digested it as the media because I was like, oh, the artist is Latinx. So I'm going to enjoy it as a Latinx person. But in this one, it was not the case.
Well, can I tell you though, it was not marketed as a Latinx anything strongly.
Oh my God, Risa.
That's what I'm trying to say. Like, so like Insecure was not marketed as a Black people show. Rami was not, you know, it wasn't marketed like that. Whereas, you know, I'll say it, like, it's unfortunate, but sometimes our Latinx
are
marketed towards just being a Latinx show. And I think I personally think that fucks us over. Like,
sort of like a gimmick even, would you say?
Yeah, because, because it's like, honestly, like, you know, we watch shows like, you know, like Vida, Gentified, One Day at a Time. And I'm Latina. So of course there's a lot of Latina shit that I'm like, oh my God, yes, I relate to. But at the same time, there's so much shit that like, I don't relate to as a Latina, but I relate to like, I don't know, one of the guys episodes. Cause I'm like, oh yeah, like I feel that. Cause when I was in school or whatever the fuck that is. But I think that, and I'm not going to even touch on like their marketing, but I just think like there are certain shows that you do see sometimes or movies. I think movies especially is a little bit more particular.
I would say books even. I would add books to that list as well.
Yeah. Well, they market it. And it's like, just because, I mean, it's great to know that it is somebody BIPOC that wrote, you know, produced, directed, created, is acting, all these things. But at the same time, that's not the like that's not how it should only be marketed. I think it just needs to be like, this is a story about relationships. This is a story about a family. This is mm-hmm. a story about, you know, a up and come, what do you call it? The coming of age, whatever. Like, right, although like, I think that that to me is why when I go into things, I try so hard, even if it was marketed as something specific, I 100% try to connect with it just being there and like the relationships and the chemistry and like the storylines, a plot, whatever, rather than being like, oh my God, I'm watching this show. And it's like, I'm so cool because it's all Latinx people. And it's like, that's great. That makes me feel great. I'll talk about it.
Sometimes you do need that. But, sometimes it's important.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, I watch a bunch of like fucking like shows that are like, you know, all like with majority white people on it. Mm-hmm. And I still relate to like maybe the main girl or the best friend or the brother or whoever that is. And I think that is that. Yeah, that's important. I'm like, but I kind of like also, this. Speak up.
but I also think that like it's about the artist's intention. Don't you think? Like, yeah. I think when it comes to advertising and marketing, a lot of times it goes out of the hand of the artist. Like sometimes the artist doesn't have a say in the way that it's being sold to people, to the consumers. Well, and that's really dangerous because I have, you know, I've seen some incredible shows that like are for me, by me, that I love. And then there's shows for me, by me, that are sold in a way that I don't want to even deal with. A little like, you know, I watch this, you know, like super,
I'm listening.
Like just.
That turns me off. It does. I will say that that turns me off.
But there's so much. And I think specifically speaking, the Latinx market is very much gimmicky in that way that it feels sort of like inauthentic in the marketing. You know what I mean? And it might diminish a lot of the artist's intention where it wasn't, that wasn't their intention in the first place, you know? It's very tricky to navigate this world of art because it's like, you know, as an artist, you create stuff that you want, whether your intention is to create art for your people or you want to create art for a wider audience, the way that it's being consumed is sort of out of your control.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I have a question before, because I know we're, you know, we got to get something to drink. I'm thirsty, but, okay, I'll give you an example. What I've heard different. Pose. What show would you say that is? Do you think that's a Black show? Do you think it's a Latinx show? Do you think it's?
You just opened up another box of worms that I would love to spend more time talking about.
I know. I know.
Tony, what did you say?
I said, above all, queer.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Oscar?
I am very torn about that show. I'm very torn about that show because it does sort of put a spotlight on the incredible ball scene, a time capsule of that day. The talent is out of this world, and the people that they got are incredible. However, I'm still torn. Again, I think about not just the art, but the artist and the person who created it is Ryan Murphy, who is a white cis man telling Black stories, you know? And there's a little bit, I bristle a little bit at that. I'm not going to lie. Just in the same way that, and every queer person loves this, Paris is Burning is like an introduction to the gay scene, introduction to the ball scene, but it was directed by a white woman. And a lot of the subjects in that documentary felt like they were being, you know, ostracized and sold as a product, you know? So it's these like complicated feelings. For another example that I'm going to say, but sorry, this again, this is a tyrant, is one of my favorite movies of all time, The Color Purple. It's incredible and it tells about the Black experience, but it's directed by Steven Spielberg. Do you know what I mean? Again, I'm just so torn about this kind of stuff.
So to wrap, just to another quick wrap it, I want you to know that Pose is 90% promoted and marketed as a Latinx show every time
what?
I've seen it.
Really?
Wow. That's funny. That's very funny.
Just so you guys know, I'm like, and I love asking, you know, my two queer co-hosts because I'm like, I also identified with it more as LGBTQI plus, like queer, like that. And, you know, and then when I kept seeing it being advertised in the other way, I was like, oh, interesting.
It is also
I know, right? But there's something to be said about honoring intersectionality. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. both of those things still exist. Mm-hmm. But right? that's not the way marketing works.
Mm-hmm. No, no.
Yeah. I hate to sound like a broken record, but again, in this capitalist society, everything is boiled down to a lowest common denominator. And that's just the way it is, you know? Mm-hmm. But art is a lot more complex than that. And I think people's experiences are far more complex than that. You can have a show that's LGBTQ. IA, but and still be Black, still be Latinx. But in terms of marketing, is like, okay, what's going to draw the biggest? Who do we focus our marketing on? You know, mm-hmm. and so that's where things get really complicated. So,
icky. I don't know. Thirsty.
I mean, a lot to think about. We are thirsty. People listening, please let us know, because this is very open-ended, you know? Let us know your thoughts, if there's any shows that you feel complex emotions about, any pieces of art that you feel weird about.
Ooh.
Please let me know, because I'm interested in...
Yeah, and also, let me know if you'll buy my book.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta find the person who sells it, though. Like,
at a bookstore, place that sells books.
Buy my book wherever you listen to books, okay? Cafecito
break!
All right,
let's take a cafecito break.
Dribble, 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 slurp, slurp. We are back from our cafecito break. And you guys, I'm so excited for our guests. You know that I'm the baller of the team. And anything that is even close to basketball just gets me so excited right now. And so we have, he is a writer, an editor, gamer, reader, NBA superfan. He's best known for his work at The Ringer, creating and hosting an Emmy-winning award digital series, NBA Desktop, and co-hosting the popular podcast Binge Mode with Mallory Rubin. And now he has other podcasts, but you know what? I'm just going to let him talk about it, because this motherfucker has way too many things on his list. All right, Jason Concepcion, what's up?
Wow.
What's
up? Thank you. That's a long resume.
I know. I need to take like a water break after the whole thing.
I've been working hard. You know, it's... there's no retirement plan, so it's just basically try and get this money and work as hard as you can. My mom is pleased right now. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Oh, yeah. So excited. You're in LA now, huh? Because you were in New York. Okay, cool.
I've been in LA. I've been here for like 4 years. At this point, I'm used to it. Like when it's 50 degrees, I'm like, why is this happening?
Isn't that so weird? Like, I'm also from New York, and how quickly I acclimated to the weather here. I become so spoiled.
Spoiled.
It's like, if it gets a little bit chilly, I'm like, oh no, it's too cold. Like, what am I? Remember the harsh ass winters of New York?
Like,
we survived through some insane weather in New York.
No. I was home right before the pandemic. So this is like January, February, just to visit my folks. And as soon as I got off the plane and went to try and get a cab, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. This is what it was. Like the weather, it just goes right to your bones and takes all the heat out. I've become so soft to it. I just don't have any ability to deal with it now.
I'm from Miami, and Tony too, and he's been all over other hotter places too, like Mexico
all
City.
Over.
Tony.
Our blood thins, like even when we come from a colder climate. And like, my first year in LA where I saw people with scars, I'm like, please.
Yeah. I have so many scars in a drawer that like, I don't know when I'll wear them again. But speaking of cities, I'm like, I love that we just jumped into the weather. But speaking of cities, you are a Knicks fan, correct?
Yes. That's a
hardcore ride or die. New York Knicks fan. I'm a hardcore ride or die Heat fan. I'm wearing my Wade jersey, my Miami Vice Wade jersey that I showed you before. And now we're in LA, the city of the champions, the fucking Lakers, who I also like deeply love so much. So this past like finals was like a wild ride for me. My boyfriend's family is very hardcore Laker fans, and I had to sit there with a really like acting face that I wasn't going to cry when we were losing. So I wanted to see how does it feel to be out here and see all the hardcore Laker fans? Because sometimes you go to certain cities and they're not that hardcore, you know, they're not fanatics.
There's a real difference to it, because like you know, when I was in New York, just anywhere but LA, like the perception of Lakers fans is like, they're all like rich and kind of like entitled and not, you know, not like living and dying with the team all the time. And then you're out here and you're like, oh, they're like fans like everywhere else. Like they're, as you said, they're like ride or die Laker fans that are just all about it. And it's a lot different than just the perception you get from seeing the crowd at like Staples Center, which obviously skews towards the people who can afford to go to Staples Center and be in camera range of the cameras.
Yeah, definitely. And so like you started making NBA shorts, like literally in a closet, correct?
Is
like,
the show we did, NBA Desktop, was it was like slightly bigger than a closet, but it was basically a closet. Like that, I mean, we did it for no money. Whatever our salaries were, that's what we were doing the show for. We did it on our phones at first before we got cameras, and the whole idea was to try to just capture the energy of NBA social media discourse, which is like a weird world unto itself, and try and like talk about the league through that lens, through the lens of the internet, basically.
Yeah. So you started like that, but then you ended up winning an Emmy. How did that change? Like, I see it in the background.
It is back there.
Wait, really? Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Prominent.
Kenny
as,
had
as
his.
Well it should be.
Yeah, Kenny had his in the background too, and we were all here for it.
I mean, you got other cool stuff in the background too. Like, is that a sword?
It is a sword. It's a prop sword. It's not a real sword.
Okay. Oh, okay.
It's a Game of Thrones sword. That was really cool. I mean, we didn't, you know, my line about it is it's an honor just to win, but it was like being nominated was pretty incredible in and of itself, because it's like we were like doing the show in a closet. We didn't have a set. Yeah. The background was all just like stuff we cut out of magazines or printed out. And we were up against, Major League Baseball, a short that was produced for Major League Baseball for like the postseason telecast, NBA on TNT, just like these huge properties. So it was amazing to win. It didn't feel any different, but a friend of mine, Eric Rideholm, who's the producer of like Around the Horn and a lot of the ESPN like conversation shows that people are like probably broadly aware of. He was like so nice to me and Jason Gallagher, who was the director of NBA Desktop, and just telling us like what to expect. And he was like, it's so cool you guys won because now people will take you seriously, which is like the thing that kind of like you don't feel any different. It didn't feel like, oh, we're made now. But as you noted, like when you go on things like this or you go into rooms and people like read stuff about you, they take you more seriously than they would have in the past, which is great for me because I didn't come from like a world where I expected to be doing this.
What was that world?
Yeah. What did you expect to be doing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I went to music school. I wanted to do film scoring.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was like what I was going to be like composing music for commercials and for television and for film. That was like the idea. And then also just like playing in bands and stuff. And it didn't work out because it's music school. And I was just kind of like doing I was waiting tables and stuff and like working as a cater waiter in New York and like doing a bunch of odd jobs. I was working at the Wallman ice skating rink that is prominently owned by Donald Trump. Like I was just doing all these like wild catering gigs like all over the city. Mm-hmm. And then my Twitter account took off. And from that, I got writing gigs. And from that, I eventually ended up being able to speak into mics for a living.
Do you remember what that pivotal tweet was that sort of made your career?
I do. I had it put on a mug.
Oh,
which
my
you can't
God.
Read.
No.
Yes, you did.
Please read it.
I had it put
us.
On a mug. Okay, so this is, I had already written a few pieces for like Deadspin and The Classical, which were now defunct like sports blogs. So I had written longer than tweet length pieces at that point. But so the tweet, here is the tweet. It is from February 21st, 2013. The tweet is this. So this is referencing Daryl Morey, who is currently the GM of the Philadelphia 76ers and was at that time the GM of the Houston Rockets. And he had just swung a huge deal for James Harden to join the Houston Rockets. This is the tweet. "Right now, Daryl Morey is in his office, door locked with a belt around his neck, furiously jacking off to the highlights of Harden's 46. So James Harden had just scored, like, had, this is like his fourth game. It's like his fourth game as a member of the Rockets. And he was going, he was like playing incredibly well. And so that was the tweet. And then shortly after that, I got like a DM from Chris Ryan, who's was my editor at The Ringer. I was like, hey, man, do you want to like, you want to freelance and stuff or be able to pitch stuff to Grantland, which was a website at the time founded by Bill Simmons. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I did that. And then I was like, I'm going to be rich. I'm going to quit my job. This is going to be, I'm going to stop doing the waitering. I'm going to stop. Like, I was also delivering leather. I'm like, I don't have to deliver leather anymore. That wasn't the case, but it was still extremely exciting and pivotal. Right. It felt great.
Oh, hell yeah. I love that you have that on a mug. It's that's so great. So, like, every morning you're just like, yeah, motherfucker, I'm that motherfucker.
Hey, never forget. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You know? That's incredible.
Yeah. Okay. So then you started your podcast and then you were on The Ringer. And that's huge, right? And so something that I really enjoy about your Twitter is and your social media is you're really vocal about politics, what's going on in the world, like even, you know, in sports and stuff too. Like, I feel like you don't really play it safe. And I personally love that shit because I'm a lot like that. I think we're all a lot like that on this team. And, you know, I was wondering, I started thinking about it, like as an actor, I think about these things. So I was wondering for you as a, you know, a podcaster, like, did you ever feel like you couldn't really be yourself, especially in the beginning? You know, you're a person of color, you're Filipino, and you know, it's a different thing. You're not a straight white man talking about sports, like 90% of sports.
I think there was, you know, there were different periods in when my Twitter was getting more popular where I was like, where I did feel like, do I need to recalibrate this for the type of people who are following me now? Like, there would be people that whose names I recognize. It's like, oh, and I'm not sure if I was in my own head about that. But like, in terms of just like talking about issues, I think surely partially because like I wasn't getting a job in like some kind of like front facing like content creator role was like not exactly what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. I never had any compunctions about just like saying what I thought on Twitter. And then, you know, the last, I want to say like even 6 years since Michael Brown, but like, and then certainly the last 4 years, it just feels like you can't like, there's people who can very comfortably not say anything. And I never felt that way, you know, like, I just didn't feel that way. If there are things that seemed really fucked up, it felt like I could at least say, even if I'm doing nothing else, I could say this is really fucked up.
And I think you have the you have like a big enough sort of reach to say these things that have major effect on the people that listen to your product. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have a voice in which a lot of people don't have that voice. And I think that's where there's a lot of similarity between all of us here on this chat right now. And I commend you for that. I think it takes, I mean, obviously a lot of bravery to say things unfiltered the way that you say them. But with that comes a lot of props that you get from people who are like, oh my gosh, thank you for wording it exactly how I was thinking it. Oh my gosh, this has been exactly what I've been like trying to process in my brain. And you like clarified that for me. So like, you're doing so much just being yourself, your authentic self.
Oh, I really appreciate that. That's very nice. That's not, I mean, again, it's like, I'm not, it's just, you see things that are messed up and it's hard to not be like, this is, why is this happening? This is so terrible.
For sure. And we see, like, we also, like, I feel like as, like, you know, people that watch sports, you see, like, the NBA, like, they're always, like, they're just always first at calling shit out and making a statement and walking out and, you know, kneel and, like, all those things where I'm, like, people talk so much shit sometimes about, like, athletes. And it's, like, they're the motherfuckers that they don't care. Like, they're, like, whatever, it is what it is. Like, you want to watch me play? Well, you better, you know, respect.
So my co-host on the podcast that we're launching next week on Crooked Media, March 16th, Tuesday. It will drop every Tuesday thereafter. My co-host, Renee Montgomery, was a WNBA player, two-time champion, currently co-owner of the Atlanta Dream, which is wild. But she, she didn't play her last season as a pro because she wanted to dedicate like all of her time to fighting for social justice, to fighting for voting rights in Georgia. Like the players in the W have been about it since the founding, because there's nowhere, like we just mentioned, like some people can comfortably remain silent. Like as a woman professional athlete, they really, and many of them women of color, this is like nowhere to not be part of the conversation around like issues. And I think specifically the W and the NBA, what is interesting to me, you know, like, of course I love the sport, but what is interesting to me in terms of like the conversation around these things, why the NBA players are always and the W players are always like in these conversations, is just like not a lot of places. Maybe this is the only place where men and women of color with like real leverage and a real ability to have platforms can use their leverage on the white guys who own everything, you know, like normally, you know, we're just so separate, like economically in other phases of life, you know, like people that the super rich white guys are not at all like affected by downturns in the economy, by the fact that people are sick. They have their, you know, they can like get the best healthcare that money can buy. They don't have to. The stock market has been going up as people are like out of work. But the place where they have to deal with those voices is like the W and the NBA. That's where they, because they have no choice, because those are the people that are the product. LeBron James,
100%,
Renee Montgomery, Candace Parker, they are the product. You have to deal with them. And that's what makes it really unique.
Yeah, so eloquently put, especially with the idea of like, I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, sports, we shouldn't be putting politics into sports. Like sports is an entertainment. It's what I consume. But there's a lot of privilege in that statement inherently. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? And the way that you said it, Jason, was like perfect, because these consumers that live a very privileged life have the benefit of putting themselves away, distancing themselves away from this political uprising that's happening. And the people that are participating in the sports in which they consume are affected by it on the daily.
I mean,
it's so wild.
It always drives me crazy when people are like, oh, let's keep politics out of sports. Meanwhile, like you watch any NFL game and they have members of every branch of the military come out before the game. Then they unfurl a 200-foot American flag. Then fighter jets fly over the place. It's like that. To say keep politics out of it is to say keep this specific lens of what is important and valuable. Keep that from expanding to include anything else.
If I could give you a standing ovation, I would. Yes, that was beautiful.
A 50-gun salute we give you.
But also, like athletes, they are also, like, they work more, like, selling, like, for brands. Like, and so it's also, like, another thing where, like, it comes into play where it's like, well, if you're, you know, so-and-so brand or restaurant or whatever, fast food chain, and you're fucking racist and homophobic or whatever, like, I'm LeBron James, I'm going to be like, no, fuck, I don't need to fuck it. Like, get me out, like, cut, like, drop me right now. Like, I'm leaving. And that's also another thing that is like, you know, that's your money. And like, I feel like a lot of athletes, like, they haven't been fucking with that either. Like, they're just like, it's fine. Like, I don't need that extra million or whatever. Like, I'd rather have my respect and my dignity. And like, that's more power to me.
I 100% agree with you. And, you know, like, as a person in my personal life, I'm sure y'all have gone through this too, where it's like, I'm at the point now, and I have been for a while, where it's like, when I'm spending money, it's like, okay, is it possible to spend money in a meaningful, not harmful way to get this thing that I either want or need? Like, is it possible to do that? And trying to make those choices.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Where do you go to find those? I know, cause we're all, like you just said, we're all in that like moral consumer mindset. Where do you go for your research?
I mean, I my friends on my group chat are, you know, I have a lot of friends that are involved in local LA politics, like Ground Game and stuff like that, and various progressive groups. So it's like, I'll always be like, hey, is there a better like when the Instacart anti-union stuff popped up, right? Recently. I was like, does anybody know like what a better, is there a better version of this that is not like openly trying to like exploit the workers who are supposedly like important to them? Like, how can I do that? I think we settled on Yum Yum.
Yum Yum.
Like, so I'll do that. Like, I'll be like, okay, is there, does anybody know if there's a better way to do this? And I'll just poll the people I know.
I mean, it's all about community, right? And just like that community consciousness for sure. Yeah.
And so you brought up your podcast that's about to drop. I wanted you to, I guess, tell us and, you know, the listeners, like, what's it going to be about? I know that there's a basketball in the picture, but, you know, I'm sold. There's a basketball. I'm in. And a WNBA player. And Jason. All right, Dale, I'm listening.
So it's Renee and I, and it's a sports show like any other sports podcast that you would think of. We're going to talk about the games. We're going to talk about where players are going. We're going to talk about this crazy dunk or goal that we saw. But the difference being, you know, we're on Crooked Media, which is, a you know, obviously a progressive platform, and we are the people who we are also. So the thing that the thing that makes it different is we're going to lean into the issues that we think are important to whatever we're talking about, whether it be racial justice, social justice, economic empowerment, that kind of those kind of conversations, where other places would like hold those conversations at arm's length, only talk about them when they directly intersect with whatever.
Right.
Yeah. We will dive into that. We will lean into those topics.
I love that. I'm not a sports person in the least, but this angle that you're describing is fascinating to me. It's a new subscriber.
Thank you so much. Follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey. Yeah. And okay, all right. So I do have some fan questions that I'll ask later. Sure. But I was wondering, now, you know, that you brought it up. So something controversial recently just happened that has to do with also something that I know Oscar is like into, which is Twitch. And so my boyfriend, I watch like sometimes like Chris Merckx and like, you know, like all those fucking like gamers, because he watches them or whatever, him and his brother. And I was seeing about someone from, unfortunately, my 305 team.
Yes.
Miami Leonard. Heat. Yes.
Myers Leonard. Former Blazer, current Heat, backup center.
Backup. Yeah. Which is also like, motherfucker, you were in Oregon. That place is also like weirdly like pretty woke as fuck, I think, in like the main part.
Yes.
There's pockets. There's some slight pockets in there.
Slight pockets and a strong history of white supremacy. I think it was actually founded in order to keep the non-white people out. But yes, pockets, certainly pockets of very vocal wokedom in that area.
Yeah. So since that happened, he said an anti-Semitic word on Twitch live. I know that he was getting like hella hype. Like he, you know, apparently people were like really into him, and even him and his wife, they do like basketball videos like that. And I was like, oh, like I remember I saw a video of them once doing it. I was like, oh, like, that's cute. Like, that's so cute. Like, they're like a basketball couple, whatever. I really didn't look into them. I just didn't care. And then this dropped and I was like, oh, fuck this guy. So how is like, I know this obviously might be something you would be maybe touching on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We would be.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like I already know how you feel about this, but.
I mean, I think that it's, for one, it's truly awful. I don't buy. So he apologized soon after, although it was a very crafted, like PR terrible. Professional, like apology that was. I think the phrase that stuck out to me was, "I didn't know what it meant." Which, I guess, the immediate follow up is, "What did you think it meant?"
Yeah,
you know, like if you're saying something,
who wrote this for you? That was my first emphatically instinct
on a stream that you know that you are on. What did you think you were saying? Okay, so like so that was my first reaction to that particular line. And then my second reaction to "I didn't know what it meant" is, you know, clearly that is meant to cover for the possibility that someone will unearth another clip of Myers saying it again. That's that reads to me like he said it a lot. He said it more than once, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I had a lot of people be like, oh, come on. He's from, I forget where he's from, Iowa or something, a very like Midwestern area. He's like, he's like, he might not have known a lot of Jewish people and this and that. I'm like, well, number one, he's like almost 30. He lives in fucking Miami.
There's a bunch of Jewish people in Miami. Like there's a huge population.
A few,
And the owner of the Heat, literally born in Israel. Like, I'm sorry, but like, you know, come on. It was truly terrible. It was there's just no, absolutely no place for it. And I think the thing that was really kind of like disturbing about it was just like how casual he was about it. Like straight up on a stream, I'm going to say this, you know, like he thought there's like a 2 second pause where he like chambers it, where he's like, okay, what am I going to say? I'll say this, word that I don't know what it means. Like, come on.
It's so wild how much like privilege that sounds like too, because it's like, even me, like, as you know, like as a, like a woman of color, Latina, like a lot of times I have to think about what I'm going to say because I don't want to offend the white person that I'm talking about. And I'm like, wait, why do I even? Okay. And it's so wild to me that a lot of people I talk to that, you know, are POC, like they're like, oh yeah, me too. But yet you talk to like white people and they're like, and it's not to like shit on all white
because we've been conditioned to think before we speak. And a lot of people aren't that way at all. You know, I was actually curious about your opinion about dealing with someone like that, because, you know, there's tons of gamers who have said really inappropriate. I mean, first of all, the gaming community is a very toxic community. Just inherently speaking, as a gamer myself,
it's radioactive.
I mean, it's straight up just woo,
straight up. You will hear every slur. You'll hear them all. 50 times.
Yeah.
And then, like, what does it mean to the road of recovery, the act of forgiveness? Like, how do we treat people like that? Like, where does the line cross, you know?
It's a great point. Like, I think about Tim Hardaway Sr. So Tim Hardaway, Heat legend, right?
Heat legend, yeah.
He, it must have been 8 or 10 years ago, made some really homophobic comments. But then he legitimately put the work in, like volunteering with LGBTQ groups, like talking to people, to the point where he is now a really smart advocate for those issues. Like, let's see Myers Leonard partner with Jewish groups. Let's see him go to the Holocaust Museum. You know, let's understand that he put the work in. Like, I don't think like he should be cancel his contract and let's cancel him. Let's get him out of here. But I do think that you have to put the work in. Like, you have to show people that you do understand why that is so hurtful, painful, and, you know, honestly, I think in the current climate, like, really threatening, like, to a lot of people, like, to just hear, I don't, you know, again, like, not to come at white people, but, like, I don't think that there's not, like, a common or a well-understood feeling of what it is like to feel constantly under threat by things that are just happening in the news around you that are being said by people. Like, that's not a feeling that people in power really have. And so I think trying to understand that feeling would be a necessary component to any kind of forgiveness.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That's so true. Okay. So before we go, I do have some fan questions. I'm not going to lie. I got so many questions asking me, why did you leave the Ringer? Like, I was like, it's so funny because I was like, my boyfriend told me that people were going to ask that shit. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, so many, like there's like literally like 30 the same question. Like,
so
I'm not going
to
lie.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah, they absolutely want to know.
It's so funny because like, it's like, I'm like, usually like it's, I don't even know. It's about food stuff.
I mean, like, listen, it's weird that when Grantland folded, or when it all went down, like, we got fired basically on Twitter. Oof. And my neighbor in my building knew about it, was like, hey, sorry about that. And I was like, wait, what? So like, the fact that people know and care about like what my job status is weird still to this day, that people are like, why did you leave your job?
Oh, we get it.
Yeah.
Another question that we have is, what's the future of binge mode look like?
You know, it's a long life. Life is long. Mallory is my best friend, basically. We talk all the time. That would be a question for the people who actually make decisions at various places.
Hmm. Okay. You all know, right.
You need to speak to the manager.
Yeah. Everybody tweet and ask for the manager. Yeah.
Oh, here's a fan question. Speaking of binge mode, because you guys talked about Game of Thrones, Harry Potter series, and the Star Wars, everything Star Wars, right? Okay, the
and
fan
Marvel,
is me.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Star Wars? What's your favorite Star Wars film?
Film? Oh, that's a great question. I'll go like super basic and say Empire Strikes Back, but then also Rogue One.
Okay.
Yes.
Really.
All right. Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
I love Rogue One. I think Rogue One's really fascinating.
Yep.
This is where I slide off. I don't know. I don't know what to answer. I don't know any of those movies.
I mean, the answer is Jason got it correct.
Okay. Mira, whatever. What he said. Then. Fine. Whatever. I'm gonna ask one more fan question, and then I'll add my last one. Okay. This is random, but I don't know if it's specific. Why is Jason a coward and scared to go on Survivor? Did you talk about this?
Yeah.
It's
so
like,
I went
calling you out.
I was on Rob Cesternino, who has a burgeoning like podcast network of his own. He was a former two-time Survivor contestant, and he has a podcast where he talks about various reality TV programs, most notably Big Brother and Survivor. And on that program, he was like, "You'd never be on it. I think they'd take you." And I'm like, "I don't know. I just feel like I don't think that I would do well." Because I think that the lack of food and heat and also like the bugs and stuff, like after a few days, I'd just be out. Yeah, I think I would just drown or something like that. I think mentally I'm tough. Mentally, I'm very tough. But like, I think physically I would begin to waste away quite quickly.
Oh, fuck that. Yeah, I agree. I would literally like never. I was reading it. I was like, I'm only going to ask because I'm like, why did they even go there? But also like, no, nobody wants to be on Survivor. Por favor, you can make money so many different
ways.
There's
tons of people that want to be on Survivor.
Yeah, there's a lot of people.
Ew, you give me a cucaracha, like just show me one cucaracha. And I'm like, yo, I will fucking drive it in on some toss motherfucker playing basketball. But you show me one fucking cockroach and that's it. I'm done. Like, I'm on top of the couch or table, like, screaming.
Absolute 100% same. Yeah.
I saw a season where there was a bug that went inside a contestant's ear.
Yeah, in the ear, in her ear.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah,
they had to have medical
get
it out.
Ew.
I think they had to, like, put, like, I think, if I recall correctly, what they had to do is, like, put, like, Vaseline like over the ear so the bug started to like suffocate and
suffocated.
Had to crawl out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. And then when it came out, it was like covered in blood. I was like, no, not for me.
Oh my God. I literally
I mean they've kind of like pulled back on the grossness in more recent seasons, but like if you go back like 10, you know, 8 seasons, there's like a lot of B-roll where it's like they're sleeping and they have the night vision on and there's like a rat just like runs over them, like runs over their face.
No, I literally just vomited in my mouth. I'm done.
Absolutely not.
I'm gonna go cry. And then,
so none of that seems enticing to you, Jason?
No,
that's kind of weird.
Oh, weird.
And then contestants who come off of it will be like, yeah, I was on a 3-week course of medicine to get rid of the parasites I had from being on Survivor. I'm like, no, thank you. Like, I don't want that.
And like 9 extra years of fucking therapy. Jesus. Oh, my God. Well, okay, great answer. Fan of that big time, because no way.
Yes.
And now here's my final question. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have so many badasses in the NBA. If you could pick your starting 5 of like now, like you can't like go back and pick like Jordan, you'd have to pick your starting 5 right now. Who are they? And you can say what position they're playing if you want. You don't have to.
I'm going to go Steph Curry at the 1.
Okay.
I'm going to cheat here and have Damian Lillard play the 2 guard.
Okay.
Let's see. At the small forward, let's have this. Let's have Kawhi Leonard at the small forward.
Yes, I love him.
Then let's have LeBron at the 4.
Okay.
And Jokic. Well,
Jokic?
Joel Embiid at the 5.
Over
Joel
Davis?
Embiid, let's have Joel.
Over Davis?
Yeah. Davis is injured right now, and he doesn't like to play center that much.
That's true.
That's very nice of you, Jason, to think about that.
That's something.
He doesn't want
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. All right. I really do like this one. This is good. It's a hard one because, like I said, there's so many people. I'm a fan of, like, the two teams, but then I'm also, like, a fan of, like, players. But I get in trouble anytime I mention Kawhi in my, like, boyfriend's house because the whole Clippers, Lakers, you know what I'm, you know what I bought a shirt of him on Urban Outfitters and it was on sale and I was like, it's cute and I'm not allowed to wear it there.
my friend once was asking me, who doesn't live here, was like, do the Clippers like have a fan base? Like, who is the Clippers fan base? I'm like, the Clippers fan base is every sitcom writer who moved to LA from somewhere else.
Oh my gosh. Oh, God. Oh, he stands the Clippers, our fellow.
That's
friends.
Another mug. Put that on a mug.
That's like actually true though.
Yeah, you can definitely sell that shit. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, yes, let's make this starting five happen. Jason, thank you so, so much for being on the pod. I love talking basketball and sports and, you know, all this wokeness that, you know, I'm so happy that you'll be able to, like, bring on to your, you know, sports podcast and everything going forward. Can you let everybody know where they can follow you on the socials and where they can listen to the pods?
Yeah, find me. You can find me on Twitter is the easiest place, at network, NETW3RK. And then you go on my bio there and I have all the links to my Instagram, Twitch account, et cetera.
Awesome.
I'm not messing with Facebook right now because I'm taking advantage of the privilege that I don't have to do it right now.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the places. And then Takeline starting March 16th. And every Tuesday thereafter, subscribe where you get your podcast and hit us on the YouTube channel.
Yes. Awesome.
Yes.
Mita, you're Tuesday like us. We drop on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
Super cute.
I love it.
Awesome. And you guys can follow us at Spanish Aquí Presents on IG, Spanish Aquí on Twitter. You can follow me at Raisa Licea on Instagram, Twitter, all the things.
You can follow me at Ozzymo, O-Z-Z-Y-M-O, on all the things.
You can follow Carlos at, of course, is Carlos at IG and Twitter. You can follow me at MiamiHeat.com.
.com. Okay.
Hello. Yes. I got a .com, honey.
Okay. Wow. The funds are real.
Yes. I've got that earwolf money now.
You got paid? Hold on. Let me check.
Oops. I'm at the Tony Roderick. Don't follow MiamiHeat.com.
Oh my God.
And check out Spanish Aquí Presents on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, the SiriusXM app, or wherever you're listening.
Hey,
Jason, thank you so much for sitting with us. You were incredible. Holy cow.
Thank you for having me.
Amazing. Such is amazing. And thanks everyone for listening. Que viva el paseo, por favor.
Esto.
Gol!